Well, you know what? Let's talk a little bit, and we can go back and forth, but you did mention the new album that you have. And so let's talk a little bit about this new album. It is, it's a quartet.
Yeah.
And
it's called Mean What You Say.
Mean What You Say.
And the title of that comes from a tune that was my solo tune with Thad Jones' Mel Lewis Band. I don't know if you know that band, but, you know, Thad and Mel had a big band. We were at the Vanguard. Still, it's the Vanguard Orchestra is still like an offshoot of the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Band. And Thad was an amazing trumpeter. And he and Mel was one of the great drummers of all time. They formed a band together. I was lucky enough to be asked to be in that band when I was 24.
Playing sax.
Yeah, playing saxophone. And clarinet as a double. And you know who else were in that was in that band? Is Richard Davis, Roland Hanna was the pianist, or Hank was the very first pianist, Hank Jones, Thad's brother, Bobby Brookmeyer playing trombone, you know, Pepper Adams on baritone sax, Jerome Richardson, Joe Farrell. I mean, all, if you're a jazz aficionado, you know every one of those names. Mm-hmm. It was an all-star band. I was the only one that was, I was the youngest guy in the band at that time, so I was not a star. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think who else was in that band that anybody would know. Jimmy Nottingham was one of the trumpets. Snooky Young was one of the lead trumpet players. He's still around playing. He's the most famous lead trumpet player of all time. So on the very first album, the tune that I had a solo on was called Mean What You Say. So I just thought on this album where they're asking me to play the saxophone again, I would do the tune Mean What You Say as one of the tunes. And so I thought it's a good title for the album.
That's great. And this was recorded in New York.
In New York.
About a year ago.
Yeah.
Right.
A little less, maybe. If you look at that picture of me inside that cover, there's a guy staring at me, the clarinet picture. It's just me by myself. Do you know who that face is?
No, I don't.
Benny Golson.
Really?
Yeah, that's Benny Golson. He was at the session. He's sitting there looking at me while I'm playing the clarinet.
Nice. So tell me about, you know, why this album was so important for you to put together. Sounds like this is a departure for you a little bit, because you've been, a lot of the stuff that you've been doing has usually been clarinet stuff.
Yeah.
And there's saxophone going on this.
Yeah. Well, I made a departure after Thad's band. I made a decision after Juilliard that the clarinet was my voice. I felt that it was a voice that was needed, and there were a lot of great saxophone players, and I was one of the good ones. I won't even say one of the great ones, but a pretty darn good one. Maybe, you know, next to the top level or whatever, if you could measure anything like that. And I just thought on the clarinet, I had something that I thought nobody else had for that instrument. So why not use it? Because it was more my voice at the time. So for the, and at that time I got a contract with GRP Records, Grusin and Rosen, Dave Grusin, you know that name?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Who lives here in New Mexico. Maybe he'll do a thing with Dave. And so I did, for, you know, 6 years, did an album a year with those guys, mm-hmm. which was great. Kind of put me on the map.
Yeah.
Clarinet album.
Right.
They didn't want saxophone. They wanted the voice, that new voice. So that was great. And that made the voice, and the clarinet is, you know, is my voice. But the saxophone still is on, it was still there, and all of my friends who know me from the early days, excuse me, said, we want the saxophone. And the guy who is the producer of these albums, Bill Soren, is a lawyer who decided to record people he loves. He's an ex-lawyer for Converse Technology.
Okay.
One of the people who put that company together, so he's got some bucks. And he decided, I'm going to record people, start my own label and record people I love. So he said, I want you playing saxophone. You have to. And the day before this album, that's why Benny Golson was there. We did an album of Thad Jones, kind of tribute album. Benny Golson played, Frank West, Richard Davis, you know, Jimmy Owens, Bobby Brookmeyer. Mm-hmm. So that's why Benny Golson is there in that picture. That's from the day before,
okay.
With him looking at me playing the clarinet. But
and so what was it like playing with these guys?
Oh, they're, you mean the Thad Jones?
The Thad Jones.
Yeah, oh, they're all friends of mine from years and years. So it's when I come from out here where we live in this kind of place where you don't see your old friends who you sat in the studios with for years and years and years. So it's great to sit next to Frank West. We'd sit on many, many a TV show, the Tony Awards. We used to do that every single year. He'd sit right next to me. And you know, all the guys. And Hank Jones, I used to play gigs for him. He was the leader, and he'd hire me to come and play saxophone and clarinet in his band.
Right.
So it's like kind of old home week with guys that you grew up with, and now we're all grown up. And Hank is 86, so he's really grown up.
That's cool.
So it was really fun.
That's cool.
Could you kind of tour us the album by picking up maybe three tracks or a couple tracks and tell us a little bit about...
Well, as I said, Mean What You Say is the opening track. That was my very first saxophone solo with Thad. Yeah, no, tenor. That was tenor. It Had to Be You is kind of a favorite tune I did on clarinet. Passion Flower, which is a Strayhorn tune, Billy Strayhorn. I'd play some of it if it could go through the mic so you could hear, but you can play it in the studio. My One and Only Love was a kind of Coltrane ballad. I did that on tenor. And here's a tune that Hank and I wrote on the date. And here's how it came about. You know, when you're on a date and you're with friends and you're in between takes, Hank and I are talking, and he's saying, and here's a tune that Hank and I wrote on the date. And here's how it came about. You know, when you're on a date and you're with friends and you're in between takes, Hank and I are talking, and he's saying, you know, we're talking about how people talk so derogatively about other people, and they don't say nice things, you know. But nowadays, we say, you mofo son, you know, the worst stuff you could say about someone. He said, back in the old days, they'd say, why you? You no good, why you? But they'd never enumerate it. You know, it's like we live in this time now, we have to kill someone and blow them up in order to get off your energy. Back then, you could just say, why you? And you felt okay. Now you have to kind of blow them up. And you still don't feel better, you know. So Hank said, why you? So I said, let's write a tune right now called Why You. And we did, just the two of us. We did this tune. You'll hear it on the album. It'd be fun for you to play it. And just piano and clarinet.
Okay. Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. In fact, I wanted to have a chorus say, why you, on the record. But Bill said, no, it's a jazz record. You can't do that, you know.
That's cool. Well, one of the other things too is I'm kind of curious about is finding out about. You said that you decided to choose the clarinet as your voice,
mm-hmm.
And
I had been studying in Juilliard for many years. I mean, it was not like I opened a case and took a clarinet out. I've been practicing the clarinet as my practice instrument for years. You know, I was in Juilliard for 2 years getting a master. I was undergraduate majoring in clarinet at Brooklyn College. You know, studying legit clarinets, classical clarinet with some of the top symphony players. So it didn't come out of nowhere.
So, yeah, well, the clarinet is also, there's not many people that play it.
Right.
Like you said, there's a lot of people that play sax, relatively speaking.
Right.
What is, what sort of draws you to the clarinet? I mean, what do you find different about the clarinet in a jazz setting?
Well, I mean, you've heard clarinet in jazz settings all through your life. Dixieland clarinet, you've heard, there's a lot of different voices on the clarinet, and I found that most of them didn't have the purity of the sound that I liked, having had that background of classical studying. So, and also having had the background of being Coltrane in my life, in my head somewhere, I dig Train, you know, and Charlie Parker and Stan Getz. So I kind of felt that I wanted to put together a modern voice on the clarinet that made that instrument fit into today,
mm-hmm.
rather than a kind of otherworldly music of Dixieland or swing. You know, swing doesn't quite fit in today unless you wear flapper clothes. You know, I love swing, but it's not today's music. We don't talk like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my idea, and it wasn't just an idea. It's kind of what I had to do anyway.
That's interesting. And how do you feel like it's being received by people? I mean, it doesn't happen that much. It's like there's a lot of folks that play the saxophone, not mm-hmm. that many that play
yeah.
the clarinet.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious about why you think that is.
Well, the clarinet's harder.
Hmm.
100 times harder than the saxophone.
Why is that?
Why? The clarinet is like being married to a very finicky, beautiful, sensitive woman that needs a lot of caring. The saxophone is like being married to a woman who accepts you the way you are, and you can do whatever you want anytime you want to. But you prefer the more sensitive woman because she's got a little more depth. She's harder to handle, takes more work. And that's what I never thought of it that way, but that's what the clarinet is.
I was going to say, man, you must have thought about this one before. That's a really good explanation.
Well, it's true because you don't play the clarinet right, it squeaks right away.
Mm.
It talks back to you. And it makes an ugly sound unless you have to really, you have to really work at the clarinet, you know. One of the famous clarinet players, I'm trying to think who it was, Johnny, I'll think of his name, Johnny Mintz.
Okay.
Was a famous swing clarinet player. At one time, he looked at the clarinet, he closed the case and said, "You win." It's the nature of that instrument. I have to work at the clarinet every single day.
So does that make you better, a better sax player to play the clarinet then, do you think? I mean, if the clarinet is so much harder.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why all through these years I didn't have to practice the saxophone, because I've got my chops on the clarinet and I could go back to the saxophone and sound pretty darn good without having had to woodshed it all these years. I've been playing it on and off, but I could go back to it, you know, whether I can have my own voice on the saxophone again or, you know, bring something new to it is another thing. But, in terms of having had a discipline, the clarinet is a discipline. The saxophone is not so much of a disciplined instrument. You know, the guys who play jazz on it, they play, and they practice tunes and they work their jazz. But it's not like, you see all those books on my stand there with thousands of notes. You know, I could spend an hour on one of those pages just learning to play those notes right and putting them in the right place in the way that I want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the saxophone, it's like, as you say, you could do whatever you want and it's okay.
Okay.
So,
interesting.
Have you heard any of my clarinet stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah,
okay.
The GRP stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Definitely. I definitely have. Great stuff. I did want to ask you also about, there's a passion in the music, and what am I trying to ask you? It kind of goes back to the thing you were talking about before about how being able to play the music actually helped you express some things that you weren't able to articulate initially at the time.
Right, right.
And how important is that for you?
Well, I mean, I think that's important for everyone. We all need an outlet where we can express non-verbally all the stuff we can't articulate in words. And sometimes the non-verbal articulation is better than the words. It's actually deeper. People get to know who you really, really are when you do your art. And even though you may not even know who you are, like Miles didn't know who he was, but he was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, externally, Miles was an angry guy. A lot of guys were afraid of him, you know, very, very sensitive, like that woman that I was talking about. Miles was very, very sensitive, intense kind of guy. I didn't know him, but from having spoken mm-hmm. to people about him and observed him and went to him play, not one of your open guys like I am. I talked to the audience. Hi, how you doing? I kind of explain when I'm playing. Miles didn't do that. It all came out through the horn so beautifully, that pent-up emotion, you know. And Miles was a prize fighter. If Miles didn't have that trumpet, he might have murdered somebody. I don't know. I don't really know. You know, he wasn't a murderer, but you know, I don't mean that. But, you know, that kind of pent-up emotion that comes from being a black person, living in New York and going through whatever he came through, although he had a rich family, so he wasn't the typical black guy from New York. But a lot of pent up emotion, and that emotion comes through with such sweetness. You know, he didn't know how sweet he was. I don't know if he ever expressed the sweetness that Miles really was, other than on the trumpet. You know, we can hear that when you just hear him play I Love You, Porgy, or something from Porgy and Bess. Or one of the sweet, any of the ballads that he played, the heart just comes right out. I don't think he got that out in life. We'll have to ask Cecily Tyson.
There you go. So did that passion for the music take you through certain periods? I mean, like, you know, besides the different instruments that you've decided to play at different times, the clarinet, the sax, the clarinet, whatever, certain periods, I mean, were there times where you decided, I'm going to play this kind of music, and because this is what speaks to me right now?
Yeah, of course.
What sort of stuff?
Well, I mean, being in the studios and being called to do certain dates, I had to play more of a funky style on saxophone, which is not my thing. I don't come from funk, you know. I'm not David Sanborn, even though I know him and sat next to him in studios, and Michael Brecker and mm-hmm. some of the more fusion-y saxophone players. I'm a little older, so I come more from bebop, from Sonny Rollins, from Coltrane, from Getz, from another thing. But being versatile, I learned how to play funky, how to play a lot of different styles. But still, no matter what, as soon as the light goes on and you have to play, there's the moment of nothingness that it all comes from. You can't be a designer musician. You can say, yeah, I'm going to try to play funky. I'm going to try. Yeah. And so maybe in a funky framework, still the light goes on and there's that moment of, what am I going to do? I'm going to just let it come out. So it all comes from that nothing place of, oh God, it's just put it in your mouth and blow. Mm-hmm. Put it in your mouth and blow. And whatever your background is and whatever you think you're trying to do, it's either going to find its way or it isn't. You know, so, whether you try this style or that style, it's always that moment, the minute you know, picture anybody here, anybody in the world getting up in front of an audience and having to talk about yourself. And that would be something you'd know about, right? Mm-hmm. So you get up in front of an audience of 500 people. Anyone who's listening to this on the radio would know how to talk about themselves, because who could talk about yourself better than you, right?
Right.
So you have this vocabulary. And so there would be that moment when you'd get up in front of 500 people and they'd say, okay, John, tell me about yourself. There'd be that moment of, where do you start? What do you do? And your mouth would start talking, and then you would go into your vocabulary. It's very much like jazz. Mm-hmm. How do I start? What do I say? There's that, how do I, what do I, and then the light goes on, and you start talking.
Have you ever had a point where you nothing came out?
No. No. There might be a slight hesitation if I thought too much about it. You know, when you're doing a record date and you have, okay, take two. Usually the first take is the best. The first thing out of my mouth would be the best solo. And they say, well, the producer, if it were like a more commercial funk date or a commercial date, well, we didn't like what you did in the fourth measure. Would you please, could you think you could like picture the sun shining and, you know, we're selling a product here. Could you picture? So you start working it to death and you start thinking, and before you know it, it gets very
stale.
That's right.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
So one of the other things I wanted to ask you as well is how has being in New Mexico impacted your music? What sort of influences has a lot of the quiet out here?
Uh-huh. Well, you notice the quiet when you first get out here and you think you're a different person. But, you know, you bring the city with you no matter what. Even though I haven't lived in New York for 14, 15 years, you know, it's in there. I am the speed I talk, you know, I'm still talking like a New Yorker. I've got that thing. I love being in the environment. I still think I am who I am. I speak to my friends all the time who still live in New York. We still sound the same. I think having this place, this is like my room when I was a kid. I just put the room out in New Mexico. So I now have this room in New Mexico where I can then practice and get very quiet and work on the things I want to work on. And then when I go play in public, I've practiced maybe even better because I got this quiet space to really pull myself together and figure out what I want to do.
Cool.
You know, it could be other guys who moved away, and there are guys who move away, you know, when they're in their 50s, who kind of lose it because they get lost, they're out of the... They're not in the city anymore. They don't have that city energy. And, they kind of get... Their life kind of slips away in terms of their art. I'm still, like, majorly into it, living in my own little box here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice little box. But
it's a nice little box. Do you ever do anything like... do you always practice here, or do you ever, like... I mean, I don't know. I probably want to go walk down that hill periodically and just start blowing or something.
Well,
like that.
Reed instruments don't work good. It's so dry here that I wouldn't... Oh. You know, I have done that in New York. I mean, Sonny Rollins and I once went out onto the Palisades Parkway in the woods and started playing our saxophones with each other in the woods.
Nice.
You know, but out here it's so dry that I don't want to put the clarinet outside there.
What would that do?
I mean, we crack it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so dry out there, and the sun, it'd have to be, you know, at least this room I can kind of control it. It has, okay. You know.
So it wouldn't crack the saxophone.
Though. No, it wouldn't crack the saxophone. I don't know if I have the need to go out there. I kind of like the sound in this room.
Okay.
This room has a good sound.
That's cool. Anyway. So what sort of projects are going on for you now? What are you doing? What's going on? You said you were in Toronto.
I was in Toronto. I played with the Toronto All-Star Big Band this last weekend, which was a band composed of high school kids and college kids. And when I walked into the room and heard them warming up, I said, oh God, these guys don't sound good. And as soon as the music started, they were killer. They were as good as any band I have ever heard. They were so motivated, and they played my charts as good as anybody could play them.
That's great.
So I do that. I go to universities, you know, and play different colleges. A couple of friends of mine who are composers have written some music for me. I'm going to go to Cincinnati in a couple of weeks and record a piece that Frank Proto wrote for me. Mm-hmm. Frank Proto has written a lot of stuff for Doc Severinsen, and he's a classical composer. We were in high school together. So he actually, you know, the only people who know how old you are the people who were in high school with you. You know, you can't get away from them, exactly. You know. So on my 60th birthday, Frank says, I'm writing you a piece for your 60th birthday. How do you know I'm 60? I'm 62. I'm also 60. We were in high school together. I'm writing this for your 60th birthday. You know, it's funny. As you get older, you start, you know, these old connections, they know exactly how old you are because they're the same age.
So you can't be in denial with them.
No,
right?
No. So he wrote a piece called Sketches of Gershwin. I have it on my stand there. Oh. And going to go to Cincinnati and record that.
Great.
And then I had a call from another buddy who's a fine composer who actually wrote the commercial Winston Tastes Good Like a Cigarette Should?
Yes, I do.
That's his music. Okay. So he's actually a classical composer. And George Rumanis. And so he's written a couple of classical quasi-jazz pieces for me I'm going to do. And a couple of jazz festivals. Go out with my own quartet. And play during the summer.
And your quartet is it these guys on the?
No, that was for this album, but I may go out with Hank if he's available mm-hmm. and feeling healthy enough to do some
Who
of
else?
That stuff. I have an LA quartet that I play with. You know, with guys from LA. Joe LaBarbera on drums.
Okay.
Tom Rainier on piano, but mm-hmm. a bunch of my friends who I like going out and playing with.
That's good.
But most of the time during the day I play tennis.
Really?
That's my passion. When I'm not playing the clarinet.
Cool.
Hitting the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned there's a lot of classical stuff that's going on in recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I didn't really know this. It sounds like there's a lot of classical stuff. I mean, you have had some classical training.
A lot
of classical training.
Yeah.
And is this been a pretty regular thing that you've
oh,
been
yeah,
playing?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, since I have a master's in clarinet from Juilliard. Mm-hmm. I was in Albuquerque in December. I played with the symphony there 3 days.
Oh, okay.
Copland Concerto. It's too bad I didn't let you guys know about that.
Okay.
Which was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And on those concerts, because I like to bring the jazz into it, I had Tommy Newsom. You know who Tommy Newsom
yeah,
is?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
He wrote me a couple of charts, jazzy, kind of Benny Goodman-esque Benny tunes. So after the Copland, which was commissioned by Benny Goodman, mm-hmm. he commissioned the Aaron Copland Clarinet Concerto, which okay. is a great piece. I played some of Tommy's arrangements with the orchestras, which were jazz pieces.
Nice.
You know.
Nice.
So I like kind of mixing that up because the jazz gives me, doing the jazz with the classical gives me an outlet.
Okay.
Where I can kind of do more of, open the feelings up a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah. The orchestra digs it too.
Very good orchestra. Excellent orchestra. Yeah. A lot of fun.
All right. I'm